The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Republican-controlled U.S. House delivered two articles of impeachment against President Joe Biden's top border security official to the Democratic majority Senate on Tuesday. It's a step that will launch a trial in the Senate, but they are expected to quickly defeat the effort.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I don't know how much of this story you're following. The Senate trial against the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is underway. Maggie, I'll throw it to you in a minute. Maybe you can look up what you shared with me yesterday. You know what I'm talking about? I was trying to share with Kathy, my wife, the other night, what you had shared. But if you could find that, I'll come back to you on it. Maybe we could share it with everyone else. So this Mayorkas impeachment is underway. There's a ceremonial, I saw a video the other day of a ceremonial walking of the two charges from the House chamber to the Senate chamber by the House impeachment managers. And the two charges were this: willful and systematic refusal to comply with the law and breach of public trust. And this is really the second time a cabinet member has been impeached in U.S. history. And the last one happened, back in 1876. It was against then the Secretary of War. But Reuters mentions in their reporting that Republicans are going after the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security for his mishandling of the border situation. What do you make of it? I don't know if you follow this or not. You know, it's an absolute mess, and nobody's taking responsibility. So these Republicans are saying Mayorkas should be impeached. Check this out.
Article 1, willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law.
Senators sat silently at their desks while Republican Congressman Mark Green read aloud the charges against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, which allege he failed to enforce U.S. immigration laws and lied to Congress. Mayorkas denies the charges. House Republicans voted to impeach him in February. They blame him and the Biden administration for the record levels of border crossings since 2021, when Biden was sworn in. Recent Reuters polls cite immigration as a top concern for Republican voters ahead of the November presidential and congressional elections. And the party has used the issue to motivate their base. Earlier in the day, Mayorkas spent nearly 3 hours testifying to the House Homeland Security Committee, the panel that launched his impeachment. He was called to testify about his agency's budget for next year, but impeachment set the tone of the hearing.
Yeah, so again, he is impeached. The articles have been introduced for allegedly violating immigration laws over how he handled the southern border. And as you know, it saw a record number of migrants that crossed last year. Our border's wide open. It is wide open. And of course, it makes you wonder, makes you scratch your head. You know, is there something more to the picture than meets the eye? Is there an agenda here? We know we got a fentanyl crisis in our border. We know that we've got enemies abroad who could easily cross the border and perpetrate some sort of attack on Homeland Security. That's a question that's constantly being put forward. But when it comes to Mayorkas, Maggie showed me something as I was walking to the studios yesterday. She says to me, "Drew, come here. Take a look at this. Take a look at this." Maggie, open your mic. Share with you what you showed me regarding the secretary and what that agenda might be, what that bigger picture might be. And again, I don't know what the source of this is. Again, I was trying to share this yesterday with Kathy. I said, but I couldn't remember. Fill me in and fill everyone else in.
This is from the Oversight Project, and they broke yesterday a series of photos of documents that were released through an American-funded NGO that's in Mexico before people crossed the border. And it says, here are flyers distributed at NGO in Mexico encouraging illegals to vote for President Biden. The flyer reads, and this is translated into English, but it says, reminder to vote for President Biden when you are in the United States. We need another 4 years of his term to stay open. And then the real kicker of this whole thing, because I know that Mayorkas has been questioned in these hearings already by astute legislators saying, is there an agenda to pump numbers in certain states so that you get more electoral college votes and yada, yada, yada. And he always plays dumb. But this says that this particular NGO is Soros funded and directly partners with the organization that now Secretary Homeland of Security used to oversee.
Wow. So
so all the back channels are open.
It's all about power, isn't it? And that's what this comes down to in the end, making sure that. So that one piece of paper said, you know, you have to vote for Joe Biden, right, in order to keep the border open.
So we can continue our work.
I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, they're no longer whispering in the corner. I mean, this is pretty clear. The evidence is out there. Food for thought. I'm just throwing it out to you. And Maggie, thank you for putting that on my radar. I'm glad to see that. What's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. More than likely, the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, will either table the matter of this impeachment or the senators are sworn in as jurors and they dismiss the charges completely. I don't think anything is going to happen to Mayorkas. I'd be shocked if it did. But, you know, at least history is being made again and light is being shown on this. I get so frustrated. I don't know if you feel the same way about what's going on in the country. I'm so sick of being gaslighted, lied to. I just want truth. I want people to uphold our American ideals and principles. And yet we don't have that. And it's weird because I think we're in a battle of ideology in the culture today. There's a conference that was going on in Brussels yesterday. It was called the National Conservatism Conference. And British parliamentarians, Nigel Farage and another person named Suella Braverman were there. And they were the heads of a state, a bishop. There were some members of the European royal families too. But because it was a conservative conference, a socialist mayor, the mayor of Brussels, Amir Kier, he sent the city police to shut it down. And he claimed that, well, the Nazis were going to try to invade it. And no evidence of that going to happen, right? There was no evidence of that at all. But the police encircled the building. It was held, that it was being held out, and wouldn't let the people, including the speakers, get in. And if somebody left, that person couldn't get back in either. And the mayor and those who supported him were claiming that they did it to protect free speech. It's an attack on conservative principles. These people were gathering. Regardless of where someone is on the political spectrum, cancel culture is never a good thing. It's never a good thing. And Sky News was the one that reported on this. It happened in Brussels. Check out what they're now reporting.
Well, let's take you across to Brussels, where the mayor has shut down a National Conservative Conference, which Nigel Farage was speaking at. Amir Kerr claimed that the move was to guarantee public safety, saying that the far right was not welcome.
There is a policeman talking to the owner of the venue in which this National Conservative Conference is taking place. The police essentially are trying to shut this thing down. They've had an order from the mayor of Brussels, who has effectively said that the extreme right is not welcome in this city and that he wants to close this venue down. They're using issues around public order and safety to do so. The police effectively saying if they do not evacuate this building anytime soon, that the police will start effectively asking people or removing people.
I'm laughing here because Maggie was saying extreme right. Yeah, they believe in one man and one woman, right? I mean, how is that so extreme? You know, and everybody believed that, as Maggie said, until about 10 seconds ago. Anyway, that's what's happening abroad. So it's not just here at home. Cancel culture is alive and well all over the planet. It's just, I go back to what I say to you every day. When I hear these stories, what do? When my frustration levels rise, I just say, Lord, have mercy, right? That's all we can do is invoke the mercy of God. I'm praying for peace. I invite you to continue to do that. I believe God's given me this platform, and I think it's a powerful platform, and I'm privileged. You know, there's probably far more qualified people to sit behind this microphone than me, but the Lord, for some reason, allowed me to be here. And I think about sometimes the gravity of what looms around us. And we are called, you know, maybe my mission is just to call you to prayer. And that's what I think. I think about the souls who've gone before us and need to remind you to pray. But I've been praying really for peace in the world and for our country. And that can make a difference. 1917, when World War I was raging, the Virgin talked about how important it was to pray. She warned of the Second World War. We knew of everything that happened. All that stuff was conditional. It all could be mitigated. whether it was La Salette or Champion or any other place you want to go back to, all conditional upon our response to prayer. So I want to encourage you as a brother, right, as a friend, you know, write it on your hand, stick it in your phone, set a reminder, jot it down on a piece of paper. Pray for our country, pray for world peace, pray for Iran and Israel right now. After Iran's very unsuccessful attempt, really it was an embarrassing attack, the president has warned Israel that if they retaliate, even in the tiniest way, Iran will throw everything they have at them and wipe them completely off the face of the earth. Now, is that a country that should have nuclear weapons? I mean, Iran has said that before. If they retaliate, they're going to unleash hell. So meanwhile, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, made it very clear that Israel, hey, they are going to respond. They're coming. And they'll come in a matter of time and in a matter of their choosing. But I want to take pause here. It's really easy, you know, to get really to get inflamed. And you're like, yeah, you know. This is when you have to pray all the more, because things can really get out of control. You know, I'm not saying there's World War III. I know Iran does not want conflict with the U.S. I don't think anyone does. I'm so glad we're American. So glad we have the mightiest military in the world. But you know what? Satan wants war. I'm convinced of it. He wants war. And these are very dark times. So I just invite you, pray. You know, pray your rosary especially. Pray the chaplet with me in about 45 minutes, and we'll ask God for his mercy. I guarantee you, he hears these prayers. It's one of those prayers he wants to say yes to, right? I don't have any doubt in my mind that God's heart is moved, that time is elongated, that conflict is diminished, right? Peace begins to swell, and prayer is what waters all that. So it's interesting, though, some countries are starting to support Israel's fight against Iran, including an editorial in a top Indian newspaper and a debate in the British Parliament. On top of that, Iran's leaders have to deal with their own people. A lot of people are disenchanted with the government, you know, the regime that is creating this type of division in Iran. There are demonstrations going on right now because there's lack of food because of that regime. They shut down media who criticize, you know, their leadership, especially those who are criticizing the failed attack, right? We see this in totalitarian type of governments. They shut down the media. They shut down speech. And I'm so grateful. I mean, there's a lot of propaganda in this country. Believe me, I see it all the time. So much gaslighting going on. But at least, you know, somebody has the opportunity to say what they want to say, even though it may not always be true. At least you're not being shut down. I mean, I could easily be shut down because somebody doesn't like me speaking the truth about gender or life or any of these other issues, right? We have the ability to do it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Pray for peace in the Middle East, because I think it could be a spark that creates a conflagration that could spread throughout the world. We're not there yet. I still believe we are in this period of mercy that our Lord spoke about. One other quick story. I want to get to Chris Temple here, too. Maybe I should jump over to Chris right now. Let me get to Chris. I want to deal with another issue, speaking of what's going on in the world. I want to talk about what's happening economically in this country. And I want to know how you're doing. How bad is it, right? I was talking about being gaslighted. I am so tired of the gaslighting from our current administration telling me how fine everything is, how Bidenomics has been working, you know, how they need 4 more years to finish this plan. Tell me the truth. Just tell me the truth. That's all I want is truth. Just tell me the truth. Hey, it's not what we thought. You're right. Inflation wasn't transitory. We called that one wrong. We're going to work hard to get it right. Be honest with us, right? Be honest with the American people. Don't gaslight us. There was an influential writer at New York Magazine, a guy named Jonathan Chait, who recently wrote a column praising the insights of the New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, who claims that the government is right, the people are responding to the polls, and they're all wrong. People are wrong, he says, because there's some kind of mass delusion going on, right? The polls say the economy's fine. Do you agree? I mean, how do you feel? Economy okay for you? How'd you like filling up your gas tank this last time? Or how big was your grocery bill? How high are those credit cards getting? What about energy? What about everything else? Auto insurance is going through the roof. Homeowners insurance, have you looked at that recently? I'm not delusional. My homeowners insurance climbed. Nationally, it's going up something like 20%. Car insurance keeps going up even when you haven't had an accident, when you go to the grocery store. You know, I know you're experiencing it. Even when the government's own numbers show this, the last inflation report actually showed that it came in hotter than was expected. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is starting now to hedge on the promise that the central bank was going to start lowering interest rates sometime this year. That may not happen. We keep being told that the economy is just going great. I don't believe it. Chris Temple joins me today for an honest look at this. I don't think he's convinced either. He's the editor and the publisher of the National Investor, which you can find at nationalinvestor.com. If you want to join us too, feel free to dial in 888-914-9149. Chris, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Drew. Good to be with you.
Always good to talk to you. You know, I got a little bit of sleep last night, so maybe I'm a little more cantankerous than I should be, but I'm so tired of being gaslighted. I am so tired of being lied to. I'm so tired of what we're seeing unfold behind us, in front of us. And the government, you know, the inflation report last week wasn't a surprise to you. I know that, but they keep telling us, hey, this is great. To fill me in on the big picture here, what about their data? Is it correct? Are things getting better? Are they not as bad as the American people think? Are they underreporting what's really going on? How do you read the winds, so to speak?
Well, Drew, I'll quickly quote a well-known Democrat figure of the recent past, Larry Summers, who was the Treasury Secretary, who, along with others at Harvard University, decided to do a study and figure out why there's this disconnect, among other things, between the polling, which shows disapproval with the economy and whatnot, and what the government reports as far as official numbers. And among the things that they came out with was that the annualized inflation rate didn't peak at 9% for the average American household. It peaked at 18%.
Wow.
In the last year and a half. The consumer price index grossly understates the real lot in life of the average person. But what has happened is, you know, as a first matter, and I've said this to you before when we've talked about this, you have to go back to where this all started. And it didn't start with President Trump. It didn't start with President Biden.
Yeah.
Each of them exacerbated it in their own way, Biden far much more so than Trump. But at the end of the day, as the late Milton Friedman said, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. And over the course of about 2.5 years before they did a 180 and started raising interest rates to try and clean up some of this, the Federal Reserve created roughly 30% of all of the U.S. dollars ever issued into existence in this country's history. Right. And they did it again in just over 2 years. So a lot of people scratching their heads, holy cow, we've got interest rates that have been raised over 5%. Mortgage rates are 7.5%, et cetera, et cetera. The stock market until recently was at an all-time high. However, the economy, at least by some raw numbers, is still doing well. Yeah, well, you give me trillions of dollars to throw out everywhere, I'll look like a genius too. But that has translated into the highest consumer price inflation we've had in a while. It's not transitory. It's not bumpy, which Powell was trying to tell us until yesterday, that this route to 2% was bumpy, but we're heading there. And then he had to run up the white flag yesterday before he got in deeper, like he did with the transitory promise long, and say, you know what, inflation ain't coming down anymore that we can see, and so we're not lowering interest rates in the foreseeable future. They made this mess.
So what do you make of the president, current President Biden, saying, I need 4 more years to finish the job? I hear that sometimes. I think, finish the job doing what? Destroying the country? I mean, 4 more years of this?
Four more years of putting election flyers in Mexico to vote for him, more years of all the rest of this silly. Look, if somebody put in front of him that, I just wanted to officially announce today as President of the United States, I am officially identifying as a gerbil. He would read that, and he would read it as seriously and as matter of fact as he reads the lines that the economy is wonderful, as he reads the lines that he brought the terrible inflation of his predecessor down, and all this other just complete and patently and demonstrably false nonsense.
What was inflation when he took office? 1.4%, something that down there was.
It was about that. And again, you know, we need to go deeper than this because people loved, and this is, and politicians of both parties take advantage of this or suffer from it, as the case may be, one or the other.
Yep.
You know, the worst bum rap in history of any president in our lifetime, Drew, was Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Jimmy Carter is remembered today in a knee-jerk fashion because he presided over stagflation and inflation and high interest rates and all the rest of this stuff. He inherited that. The ones responsible for that was Richard Nixon, who took us off the gold standard,
yeah,
and Nixon's Fed chairman, Arthur Burns, who was the one that created all this high inflation and mess that was already there when Carter came in. And likewise, I don't care if it was Pee Wee Herman who had been president in the recent past. When the Fed went so nuts in printing money, you're going to get higher inflation no matter who's in the White House. Now, the president has exacerbated it through a lot of different policies, mostly on energy. We shouldn't have the energy costs we do right now, but he's done a lot of harm. The whole electric vehicle thing that was supposed to help out, he's totally messed that up. I mean, that industry now is a basket case in the recent past, thanks to him. And this was supposed to be his crowning achievement to give us a green economy. So yeah, you have rising costs there. You got rising costs for everything else.
Yep.
And not, you know, last but not least, I mean, you got to bail out student loan borrowers. We got to need zillions of dollars more for Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan and God knows what else is coming. Mm-hmm. And look, this nutso government spending and running up debt is inflationary too, and no one's stopping it. The Speaker of the House isn't stopping it. He's another Republican Trojan horse.
Yeah. My guest today, Chris Temple, if you want to join us, you might agree, you might disagree, feel free to pull up a chair. The number's 888-914-9149. And you know, let's take a look at some of the things that surprised me. One of the things I said to my producing team, I said, look, I want to talk. I paid my homeowner's insurance. Couldn't believe how high that went. I thought, why did it get so high? Auto insurance went up. We got a whole litany of other things, and maybe you can take us through some of that. If you're just joining us, today we're looking at Americans grappling with just a myriad of financial challenges. Surging costs of housing and healthcare, escalating prices of food and transportation, the financial burden on households across the nation is intensifying. You might be feeling it. I know credit card debt is up high. When we come back, we'll take a few of your calls and we'll take a look at why. You know, and how do we remedy this? How are you going to get through all this? Housing, healthcare, education, wages, the broader implications of all this. We'll dive into that more right after this.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Viviana, who's listening in California, for donating her 1975 Mercedes-Benz 450. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
If you've ever had a tax season surprise and received a smaller than usual refund, or maybe even had to pay taxes, you may have wondered what happened. Withholding may be the number one reason for filers seeing either an unexpected refund amount or owing money at tax time. The IRS website encourages people to periodically complete a paycheck checkup and adjust their withholding accordingly, especially when your employment, income, or family situation has changed.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, Maggie, you and I were just having that conversation. That's an interesting rejoin that you played there. Tax withholding, and we may talk about that in the future. There's a theory about maybe changing the way that's done. But Maggie just told me that she had to write a check, she and her husband. And I love your little caveat. It would be nice to send a note with your taxes, wouldn't it? You want to share the room what you think?
I would very much like to send a note with my taxes and ask that none of my monies be used towards transgender policy making or abortion services. Yeah. It's like taxation without representation. I just feel like I'm giving money to Caesar and he's doing very awful things with
that's
it.
That's so true. I'd love to have, you know, I that's a whole nother conversation. We should talk about it. I could go down that path too, but I totally agree with you. I feel the same exact way when you see how your tax dollars are being used. Yeah, I thought today I'd, for just a few more minutes, take a look at not just the cost of gas going up or food or some of the other things you might be feeling immediately, but there's a lot of other escalating costs. And you got home and auto ownership going through the roof right now. There was, in recent reports, surging costs associated with not just home, but auto ownership as well. And it's painting kind of a stark picture for the financial pressures that are facing a lot of Americans today, from skyrocketing insurance premiums, rising property taxes, maintenance costs, homeowners insurance, and a litany of other things. I was reading an article about a couple in Kentucky, and they paid off their primary mortgage, but they saw their homeowners insurance rise 63% over 2 years, along with increases in their property tax or utility costs, their homeowners association fees, and those non-mortgage related expenses. It's consuming a larger portion of their homeowner's budget, and it's making them it's making life difficult for them. So I know this is a pressing concern for a lot of Americans. Both renters and homeowners are facing steep costs. I'm joined today by somebody who can give us some perspective on it. That, of course, is Chris Temple. He's the editor and the publisher of The National Investor. Check them out at nationalinvestor.com. I get his emails as well. That's Chris Temple at National Investor, nationalinvestor.com. Hey, Chris, let's talk housing and the pressures that so many are experiencing. Insurance is up, so are a lot of the other costs associated with home ownership. Give me your take on what's happening in that arena.
Well, I'll tell you, housing costs have been a killer for a lot of people, Drew. And here again, it's one of the things that has surprised a lot of folks, because you would have thought over the last 2 years now, with this rise in mortgage rates, which for a while were down around 3%, they peaked at 8%+ not long ago. They're heading back there, and perhaps even higher before this year is over. Yet there has not been that much of a drop in the cost of houses. And the reason is, and this has been well covered, I think, in even the mainstream media, there's a shortage of supply. We have our priorities as a society screwed up. Yeah. Before we're spending money, tens of billions here and hundreds of billions there, on war and pork and all this other kind of stuff, we should be dealing with this issue, because it's caused a terrible societal problem. Yeah. And this goes back to, you know, the point that you brought up when you started this segment about the GDP numbers, and we're told how wonderful they are, yet the polls show something different. Yeah. Well, the polls show something different because when you look at gross numbers for GDP, just like the stock market returns and other things, these things have been increasingly concentrated in fewer and fewer hands. And one of the things that Bidenomics has accelerated has been what has gone on for a lot of years now, because of the system that we have, the stratification of wealth and the stratification of class in America. The majority of the people in this country, they sure don't think that GDP is hot. They sure don't think we're growing better than anybody else and things are gangbusters and the Democrats should be rolling out the old Roosevelt theme song, Happy Days Are Here Again. Again, they think it's tough to get by. And, it's why, you know me, I love to always bring us back to Catholic third way economics and question the very system that we have. You know, a lot of times people who are conservatives or capitalists will deride things like this. But you go to some of the more, quote, progressive European nations, and they long since have got more serious about measuring the health of their population economically, with including mental health, with including your living standards, with including a lot of things. Yeah. GDP is not just how much corporate profits in the stock market are doing and how much richer the 1% are getting. It should be covering everybody, all of society. And we unfortunately don't have that.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Chris, first, thank you for being here. I'm always grateful for your time and insight. If people want perspective, fill everyone in on National Investor. We don't always talk about that, but let me get them connected to the work you do at nationalinvestor.com.
Yeah, simply go to that website, nationalinvestor.com. If you're not already there, sign up for my free mailing list. I've got, starting this weekend, in fact, with the energy situation, I've got a series of special issues coming out that talk about all of this and, what I've talked about going forward is the great stagflation.
Yeah.
that we have started. And more so, what you need to do as an investor as well as a consumer. So again, nationalinvestor.com, and we'll get that to you.
So do you think we're going to hit stagflation? You think stagflation will be
a problem? We already have it. Really? We already have it. I mean, you know, the only reason people...
Before you do that, why don't you define it for everybody?
Sure. Stagflation was a term coined during the 1970s when we had rising inflation and interest costs, a weaker economy. What was an aberration in a way is that typically if the economy slows down, that means inflation slows down. But back then there were reasons why, leading off with energy because of the Arab oil embargo and then other policy issues, oil continued rising, and it actually, as it rose, made the economy worse. We don't feel it as much yet today, but it's there. And again, a lot of the average households in this country, they certainly are hurting from the price of gasoline, what it costs to heat and cool their home and the rest of it. So stagflation means you have rising costs and a weakening economy. And we're going to see more of that, especially now that Powell had to admit yesterday that interest costs are not going to come down, probably going to go up further, at least in the market, for mortgages and for corporate borrowing and stuff. That's going to reduce corporate profits. It's going to become a vicious circle. I don't think it's going to be anything necessarily abrupt, but we're in for years of, if you want to call it, the great stagflation, the slow, dull ache or whatever. So for consumers, that means you've got to learn ever more to distinguish between wants and needs, as you need to tighten your belt and maybe spend a little bit less on discretionary things. For investors, as I'm going to be pointing out in these reports that are forthcoming, it's actually not a bad scenario looking at it purely from an investment standpoint, because it's actually going to force more sobriety back into the markets.
You know, this conversation can leave people depressed. Any hope here?
Well, I think there's hope in that, again, with what we're seeing going forward, it's going to cause people to look at things more realistically. You know, the free money is over with. As an investor, you can't just close your eyes and throw money at big cap tech stocks and think the Fed's got your back. We're going to be real. I mean, you're going to have to make sound decisions as an investor and consumer both. So I think that bringing some reality back is going to be a better landscape, at least in that sense.
Yeah, well said. Well, Chris, thank you very, very much for your time. Again, people can go online to your website. Please do. I think you'll find it of value, nationalinvestor.com. That's nationalinvestor.com. We'll catch up again soon.
Okay, Drew, take care.
Thanks. That's Chris Temple. And I get to read his stuff. I think you'll find value in it. Go and check it out. Hey, the chaplet is about 20 minutes away. I want to share with you an email that came in from Patrick Madrid, my colleague. He sent this to me. I don't know whether it was over the weekend or I think it was over the weekend. And he says, hey, check this out. And I thought maybe I would address it. It came from a listener. You know, Relevant Radio reaches all sorts of people, right? All walks of life. And we reach people who are homebound. We reach even the incarcerated. And this person wrote and said, hey, Patrick, you know, I admire your work and Drew Mariani and Jesse Romero's and others on Relevant Radio. He says, I used to listen to you in prison. And he says, I'm out now. I still struggle, he says, Well, I struggle with self-abuse and self-pleasure, and I want it to stop because I know it's wrong. It's, you know, it's just after confession, I too easily go back, he says, like OCD. What are some strategies you could give me? I've already promised my girlfriend I'd stop. I don't want to break that promise, but I do want to wait until I am married for intimacy, and it's going to be hard. Could you help? And I'll leave it at that. And Patrick said, you might want to share that. I thought, you know what? That is such a great email. We can speak to it on so many different levels. It's hard when you find yourself in a habitual practice, right? It is really, really hard. First thing I'd say to you, Chris, the gentleman who wrote, first, remember the profound sacramental life that the church offers. And confession is really the key. It is the absolute key. This goes for anyone who's listening. If you are struggling with gossip, if you are struggling with impurity, if you are struggling with pornography, if you're struggling with self-abuse, if you're struggling with whatever it might be, there's a habitual sin in your life. Regular confession is not just about seeking confession. It's about healing. And it's about strengthening. And the Eucharist, of course, you know, as Catholics, we're so blessed. We have that spiritual sustenance. And it will nourish you. It will fortify you. They'll help you to grow in sanctity. And that's what you need in effort to rise above this proclivity you might have to sin. The other thing I would suggest to you, too, prayer. Right? I'm a man of prayer. I believe in making time for prayer. I think it changes things. And it clarifies your spiritual landscape. It lets you see things differently. And the other thing is find a spiritual director. Right? Talk to somebody about it. When you find that temptation, go to a confessor. There's some simple things you can do. Somebody once said to me too, just spiritually speaking, use holy water. You know, if it's the TV, if it's the computer, if it's the bedroom, if these are the areas that you are struggling in, use holy water in those rooms, right? How about taping a picture of the Blessed Mother to the computer or the laptop? That'll stop you, right? Or a miraculous medal or a St. Benedict medal or a big old crucifix. Put that up. You know, those are some of the things you can do that will help you perhaps rise above this. There's a thing that the church often talks about. It's called custody of the eyes. And you got to guard what you look at. Set boundaries for yourself. Know your triggers. What triggers you? Is it stress? Is it anger? Is it loneliness? What are those things that set you off? And knowing those boundaries, make sure you protect yourself from it. And know this, God's mercy is endless, right? It's limitless. His love is unconditional. And you are not defined by your past. You are loved by God. And you are called to greatness. You are called to purity. And I'll tell you what, if you ask God for it, he will certainly give you the grace to rise above whatever that habitual sin is.
I feel very strongly that in a lot of ways, if you're trying to remove something negative out of your life and your behavior that way, that you have to learn how to substitute or fill in that space that you would be emptying with something beautiful. You have to learn why you're just not doing something. You have to learn at all the beautiful things that you're gaining in the absence of not doing something. It's not just not just about, oh, don't look at porn, right. Don't do this or that. It's you're gaining custody of the eyes. Right. You're learning how to appreciate someone for their whole beauty of being a person. You're learning how to have better relationships, better boundaries. Like these are, you have to know why you're doing something.
Maggie, I love that because it makes me think, that so many people think that the church is all about no, right? No, 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 no to this, no to that. It's the wrong way to look at that. You know, it's about vice and about virtue. That's really what it is about. You know, you build those spiritual muscles. You say you gain custody of the eyes. You gain a freedom because really you're enslaved by this behavior of self-abuse or having to check out pornography or whatever it is, the gossip, whatever your weakness might be. When you begin to practice virtue, you find yourself able to strengthen your will. That's why I like fasting. I heard a guy once a long time ago mention when it came to fasting, it's not just spiritual. He says, I say to my body, I can eat whenever I want, but I'm in control and I don't need to eat. So you start to build your willpower, your control over your appetites, your control over food, right? And the same thing, you need to build that control over your sexual appetite or whatever your weakness might be. And when you begin to practice that, you build those spiritual muscles and you will rise above it. And just take heart too, because you're not alone. And with God's grace and the support, I really believe the church, you have to, especially if you're Catholic, man, tap into the sacraments, right? You can redefine your life. Right, you can become a beacon of hope. You can become a testimony to the power of redemption and a witness to other people. Every day is a new beginning. You might fall, you can always get up again. It's the beauty of our faith, and that's the greatness of God's mercy. I'll tell you what, let me take a quick break. When we come back, I'd love to hear from you, all right? And maybe you can sound off too. Maybe you got some advice for Chris. If you find yourself, or if you found yourself in a habitual sin, maybe, gentlemen, you looked at pornography and you can't rise above it, and you found a way to defeat it. Maybe you were, drinking a little too much. How did you rise above that? You know, maybe it is some other sin that has become habitual in your life. What were your strategies? What are your secrets? How did you rise above it? Maybe you can give hope to somebody right now that says, I'm too weak. This sin's too big. It's too strong. I can't conquer it. Feel free to give us a call. We'll talk on the other side. The number to get in right now, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Our conversation will continue with more right after this.
The hope lives here. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm handing holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Yeah, the Chaplet is about 10 minutes away. I'll take a few of your calls. You can get in right now, 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid, my colleague here, sent me an email from a man who was in prison. He's now in a relationship with another woman. And he finds himself wanting to be pure, wanting to be chaste, but man, he struggles with that purity, that, you know, with that self-abuse, as he puts it. And, you know, he was just asking for some advice as to what to do. And I thought we could talk about it. But, you know, again, I go back to, I think, the formula for success, and that is, it's prayer and sacraments, right? It's beginning to fast. It's beginning to build those particular spiritual muscles, if you will. When it comes to confession in particular, there's a grace that comes with that sacrament. And it will deepen and it will strengthen the grace that you got at your baptism. It will restore that friendship with God. It will repair and even elevate that relationship with the body of Christ. And I'll tell you, it's a place where miracles happen. If I have time, I'll share with you a little bit of what St. Faustina encountered in the confessional. But first, let me grab a few of your telephone calls. Diana's in Huntington Beach, California. Diana, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Bless you. Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
Yeah. To respond to that, you know, I think a lot of what I've seek help is confession and going to church regularly on my day off. I have Fridays off, and I go to church in the morning and I go to church on Sunday, and there is confession on Fridays. And I do that at least once a week, if not twice a month, because of the fact that when I'm confessing, I know how to better myself through that. And it has kept me away from those sins that I was habitually, you know, creating daily. So I think it just through prayer, confession, definitely. And, you know, I do adorations on Fridays as well with my church at St. Vincent de Paul in Huntington Beach. And that just being with Jesus one-on-one for that hour is, I mean, you can stop doing a lot of habitual things. You know what I mean?
No, I love your call. I love what you had to say. I think you are so right. Adoration is so powerful. Confession too, to your point. And I'm such a believer in it because, look, everybody struggles with some sort of sin. And you find yourself back in the confessional confessing again and again, and you feel like, oh my gosh, it's like it's the same sin over and over again. I missed mass. Yeah. I gossiped. I did this. I did that. Whatever it is, right? How do you rise above it? I think you're right. You get those graces in that confessional because you also get advice from the priest who's there in persona Christi, right? And the Lord told St. Faustina, I'm only hidden by the priest. You actually encounter Jesus Christ in that sacrament like you do in the Eucharist. So be open to the advice that he gives you. Receive the grace that he wants to give you. If you're struggling with habitual sin and you fall into it again and again, I know you might feel trapped, you might feel disheartened, you might feel isolated. I've got good news for you, right? Grace is available in that sacrament. It's tailor-made for your struggles. It is. And when it comes to grace, you might say, well, what's grace? You know, what really is grace? Grace is a gift. It's free and unmerited favor from God. And it will help you respond in those times of difficulty, It's not just a one-time help. It's continual support, and it will transform you. It'll empower you. I love what Diana had to say. Let me go to Daisy. She's got some other advice as well. She's joining us from Wisconsin. Hi, Daisy.
Yeah, hi. Nice to speak with you, Drew. I agree wholeheartedly with everything that has been said by Maggie, by your most recent caller. Just wanted to point out that, you know, idle hands, idle minds, that's the playground of the devil. And so on the practical side, and definitely we cannot do these things without God's grace, but, you know, keeping your hands and keeping your mind occupied. So if you have a tendency to do these habitual sins, you know, at home, get out, go volunteer, go for a walk. And we got to have, like you said, custody of our eyes, custody. You know, instead of, you know, looking at, be it, you know, pornography on the internet or books that's not doesn't give glory to God. You know, we have to substitute those positive things, you know, to help us occupy our hands, occupy our mind, get custody of our eyes so that we can help ourselves, you know, to practically turn our back from those kinds of habitual sins.
And like
you said, Drew, every day is a new day.
Amen to that.
If we fall, we pick ourselves again.
First of all, thank you. Daisy, I love your idea. I think when we volunteer, when we give of ourselves, it's a sacrifice. You know, we can give to God financially. We can give of our time and our talent. It's another thing in addition to our treasure. And it's a great sacrifice to give up that that gift of time to others. And I think volunteering, I love Diana's comments on adoration and going to Mass more frequently. I'm a big believer in etching out time for prayer and, of course, confession. These are really important things to help you rise above that. Daisy, thank you very much for joining me. And if you're just joining me, I have a moment or two left. I'll grab another call or two here, too, if you want to get in. 888-914-9149. Just one other thing, because I go back to what this former prisoner said, and he's really struggling. He wants to be pure, right? He's dealing with impurity. I think this is such a... this is quicksand for so many men and women today. It's not just a male thing. And I worry so much for kids with the pornography that is now so rampant. And if you're listening and you're grappling, you're struggling with the chains of pornography, caught in the web of an immoral lifestyle, maybe you're living with somebody right now and you knew it was wrong at first, but now you're like, well, we love each other, right? You're cohabitating. Maybe you're in a same-sex relationship, whatever it might be, you know, whatever it is that's disordered. I'm telling you, confession is the way to go. I think of what the Lord told us in the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. You know, purity is not about repression, as Maggie points out, or denial. It really is about freedom, right? It's about the freedom to love in the way that we were created to love. That's truly what it's about. And it's about seeing others not as objects, but as persons with dignity that are worthy of respect. And, you know, what does pornography do? It does quite the opposite. It distorts the beautiful gift of human sexuality. And I don't have to go down this lane. I know you know this. The problem, John Paul II famously said, right? Remember his famous quote on this? He says, the problem with pornography is not that it shows you too much of the person. It shows you far too little. That's the problem. Let me take a few more calls. Mark is in Pennsylvania. Mark, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Drew. How you doing? This is a great and important topic, obviously. I want to say that just in my own life, you know, one thing that's helped, and this is like counsel I've received in spiritual direction and confession, is just to be careful of self-condemnation, especially in this area, because it's, you know, so often so fraught with shame, you know, directed toward yourself, and it can keep you in a dark place. And, you know, as God extends his grace to us, we need to extend grace to ourselves as well. And realize that oftentimes in overcoming these things in our life, you know, we have to be patient. We have to, we have to be patient with ourselves and patient with the Lord, you know, as he helps us to work through the, you know, kind of the issues that are really at the root. You know, oftentimes in these areas of sexual sin, you know, they're more the external fruit of deeper needs of healing in our life. And we just have to realize that and experience God's grace and goodness and mercy and pick ourselves up when we fall, right? You know, we fall, but we get back up again. And that's the constant reminder. Our Lord gave us that example on the road to Calvary through his falls. And we just need to pick ourselves back up with his grace and his goodness.
Hey, Mark, thank you for taking the time to call and to share. It was so well said. And I'm going to leave it at that point. Do not fall to shame. And he's right. It is a trick of the evil one. And I know he uses it very effectively on many of us, right? To think, oh, I can't go back and confess this again. I can't get above this. You know, it's do not look. Take heart. You're not alone. You know, we got God's grace. God is love and mercy itself. You know, St. Faustina recorded in her diary that she called it the astonishment of the angels, right? It's the wonder of the saints. No mind, human or angelic, will ever be able to fathom the depths of God's mercy. Trust in it, right? God is on your side. I got to take a short pause. I'll be back on the other side and we'll pray. All right, let's pray the chaplain. Let's pray for miracles in our lives. Let's pray for healing and for whatever else you need. All right, chaplain, straight ahead. Stay with me.